Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well-Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and many times ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting from the very Well-Armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well-Armed Radio. Just a free man here trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism. And encourage you to be a part of the show with your comments in the chat, the Blog Talk Radio chat, if you're listening live, or if you catch this podcast after the live broadcast, which is this week occurring at 9 p.m. Central Time here in on Sunday night, which is when you can catch us live. Otherwise, we go to podcast immediately following the show, and you can hear the show at your convenience, at your leisure, which is how most people catch the show. But it would be nice to get the live listenership up again sometime, which of course requires my effort in having the show at a reasonable time, holding the show broadcast, live broadcast at a regular time, which is something that I've been pretty bad about over the course of the summer, just when it's light later, and you know that every excuse I've made over the course of the summer for not doing the shows on a regular basis enough, probably, and certainly not at a regular enough time frame. But we get really regular over the winter when and listenership always drops off over the summer anyway, the 3 months of nice weather we get here in Wisconsin. But yeah, during the winter we're solid 7 o'clock usually. Excuse me, 7 o'clock. Sometimes 8 o'clock. Usually 7 o'clock every single Sunday night during the winter hours. During the late fall, certainly late fall, winter, early spring. Once the time change hits and it gets dark before 7 o'clock, then we almost always start the show right at seven. So hope you guys hope to get a better live listenership once we return to the winter months and some more regular. Of course, it'd be great to have a better live listenership in the summer months as well. But like I said, I understand why that doesn't happen. Again, most people catch it from the podcast. But you can call the show if you're listening live, 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. You can also email me, nik@wisconsincarry.org. Love to hear your comments, stuff you liked about the show, stuff you didn't like about the show, something you thought that I was off base on, something you thought I was right on point on, and always interested to get feedback from people. In fact, I like to use that feedback. I use that from, some people listen to the show and they email me, and then I tend to respond to that feedback on the following week's show. But start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And as always, the first 50 minutes of the show I keep for open line for live listeners who want to call in and ask anything they'd like to. But given most people are listening to the podcast at a later date and time, obviously that isn't something that we see a lot of here, pick calls for open line. But I'm going to start the show tonight with a discussion about an incident that occurred actually last Sunday, which was actually the reason why I didn't get a show in last Sunday. Well, this specific incident had no reason to do with it, but the activity that I was participating in had something to do with why there was no show last Sunday. So I went golfing last Sunday at the Broadlands Golf Course, a private course out in private course that's open to the public. When I say private course, there's municipal courses here in Wisconsin and some very good ones. A lot of Waukesha County has some great courses. I think Washington County has some great golf courses. Milwaukee County has some okay golf courses, Greenfield and Curry, Whitnall, Oakwoods is a really nice public course. But those are owned again by usually the city, used by the county courses. You go down in some other places, like example, Delavan. Delavan's got a municipal course. It's owned by the city of Delavan, Del Brook. And that happens across the state. And then there's also private courses that are open to the public. So there's private courses that are private exclusive for membership only. Then there's private courses that are private but open to the public. And that's what the Broadlands is. It's a private course. And this is relevant if you think I'm off on a tangent here, which I've been known to do, but the Broadlands is a private course open to the public. That's important. County courses are public courses open to the public. And by public course, I mean they're on municipal property, county property in most instances, but some they're cities, municipalities, example, Delbrook down in Delavan, which I bring that up because that's where I'm from, so I'm familiar with the ownership structure there. But and I'll give you another one here in New Berlin. We've got New Berlin Hills here in New Berlin, which is a public course. The city of New Berlin owns the golf course. The city of New Berlin contracts with someone. I think New Berlin's actually the contract with a company called Golf Green Partners or something like that. And they run the operation out there, but New Berlin owns the course. It's public land that New Berlin runs the course on. So I'm at the Broadlands, again, private land, private development, private course, open to the public. You don't have to be a member to play there versus, say, Westmore Country Club, really nice country club in Brookfield, private course, not open to the public. You have to be a member to play there. So I'm at the Broadlands. I played at the Broadlands probably 20 times in the past 2 years. Certainly before that, I probably played at least a few times a year. So since I started golfing again, I was a high school golfer in high school, college, and then started bodybuilding, quit golfing, took a 17-year hiatus from the game, then started playing again back in 2014-ish, I think. And so the last 7 years I've been playing again, I don't remember the first time I went to play Broadlands, but I've been playing there for years. And when I golf, what I do is, well, maybe I should just tell the story first. So I'm playing at the Broadlands. I guess I need to tell the, so you got played there multiple times already this year, probably 4, 5, 6 times already this year, maybe more. But yeah, I mean, probably closer to, yeah, I'd say 6 to 10 times already this year that I played the Broadlands. When I play, I typically open carry no matter where I go. If I'm going to the grocery store, if I'm going for a walk with the dog, whether I'm on the Kettle Moraine hiking or walking them down in Milwaukee's, you know, lakefront, I typically open carry. That's what I do. I do it for two reasons. One, it's the most comfortable for me. Concealed carries, you know, inside the waistband, not the most comfortable carry for me. I do it sometimes, but I'm usually, I prefer open carry. I got a nice Blackhawk Sherpa retention holster that I carry, usually my Glock in. Sometimes I do what I call discreet open carry, which is where I pocket carry a Smith & Wesson Airweight. It's in a neoprene Blackhawk holster with the inside. It's an inside the waistband holster, but instead of inside the waistband, I stick it in my pocket and I clip the belt loop clip on the outside of my pocket. So really with the little air weight and the kind of shorts, I usually wear cargo shorts, you know, it's pretty much just a, the handle of the grip of this little snubby revolver, Smith & Wesson Airweight, 637 Airweight, sticks out of my pocket. So most people tend not to notice I'm carrying, but not always. I mean, that's how I pocket carry that little thing into, well, several years back in 2014 when I started playing, I pocket carried that into New Berlin Hills. And then the next week I show up there and boom, there's a handwritten sign on the door, no guns allowed. I was like, okay, bullshit. So I called some people I knew at the city, said, what's up with this? They called golf. They called the course and the signs came down and I've been open carrying there ever since. Now, municipalities are allowed to post their buildings. New Berlin could post the clubhouse. They could also be jackasses and post the restrooms on the golf course if they wanted, because that's considered a building. They don't. I play a lot at Nagawaki War Memorial. It's probably my favorite place to play. I play there usually every Friday. Nagawaki's a great course. It's a municipal course, so they could choose to post the clubhouse. But those being public land, they can't post the grounds. You cannot post governmental municipalities, even the state of Wisconsin. You're not allowed to post grounds, only buildings. So public land is you're free to carry, exception being special events. Special events, something that's 2 weeks of duration or less, has controlled access, you know, is closed during non-business hours, access restricted. So you either have to pay admission to get in or there's regulated entry through, again, a controlled access. So in other words, a farmer's market. That's not a special event. It occurs for more than 2 weeks out of the year. It's free to come, free to go. There's no controlled entry and exit points. So again, not a special event. That's important because there's many municipalities who would, like Madison, for example, they would love to post their farmers markets. They would love to post their outdoor street market, Maxwell Street Day type things, all those things. Events in parks, you know, cities like Madison would be all over posting those, but state law doesn't allow them to do so. They can post buildings, and of course they do. Madison posts, I think restrooms at parks are posted, but the parks themselves, they can't be there. You know, they're not allowed to carry. So same thing with these golf courses. They cannot prohibit me from carrying on the course when it's a public course. Broadlands actually could. So I'm at the Broadlands. We're playing with my fiance. It's a Sunday. It's nice weather. It's busy. We figured it was going to be slow as shit round. I like to play by myself often, and I play you know, the average for 9 holes is like 4 hours and 30 minutes. So, or excuse me, for 18 holes, 4 hours and 30 minutes for a round of golf. 9 holes for a foursome, 2 hours and 15 minutes is the standard. But for me, when I play alone, and I'm a pretty good golfer, about a 4 or 5 handicap on a good day, 6 or 7 on a bad day. I play in about an hour. I mean, I can easily play 9 holes in an hour, especially when I'm playing well, which is most days, not all days, most days. So yeah, 9 holes for me in an hour is pretty easy. I could do 18 in, you know, 2 hours, 2 hours and 10, 2 hours and 15, pretty easy. So we get out to the Broadlands, knew it was going to be slow. My fiance and I were playing, and where I'm like maybe the third hole, fourth tee, a little bit backed up. There's a couple in front of us with their kids, so a threesome. And then they said to me, oh, we just called the clubhouse and complained because there's an eightsome playing a couple groups ahead, and it's really slowing down play. You know, it's slow, blah, blah, blah. And so the ranger, they're sending the ranger out. So the ranger comes, and I see the ranger talk to them. Then the ranger drives back and talks to us. And I'm standing there next to I'm standing next to the golf cart. Kim is sitting in the golf cart, my fiance Kim. And the ranger starts talking to us and says, hey, yeah, how's things going? I said, oh, not bad. He's like, sorry, it's slow. I said, oh, you know, we figured it was going to be slow. It's, you know, Sunday, nice weather, Sunday afternoon. Usually amateur hour, people coming up. So he makes this ranger, this older guy, you know, probably retired, he's probably had a career in his life, and now this is just kind of a retirement job. He says, oh, well, I forget what he said. If he said, keep control over that gun, or make sure you keep that gun under control, or whatever that was sitting. So I stick, when I'm golfing, I take this, my little Smith & Wesson Airweight, out of my pocket, and I stick it in the cup holder of the golf cart. Now golf carts almost all have the cup holders in the center of the golf cart. Used to be the cup holders are kind of on the outside edge. Now almost all golf carts, the cup holders are in the center. It's kind of like a center console for the golf cart. It's usually like two cup holders on for each side. So 4 cup holders, 2 for the driver, 2 for the passenger. And then sometimes a little square cubby in the middle as well. And then you've also got the front side pockets of the golf cart that you can throw stuff in. So I stick my Airweight in the neoprene Blackhawk holster in that cup holder. It actually, the smaller cup holder, it fits pretty snug, top to bottom of the gun, trigger guard to top of the frame. And then being in the Blackhawk neoprene holster, I then stick my Leatherman, which is I carry everywhere, my Leatherman, I stick that right next to it in the cup holder, same cup holder, and it wedges it in pretty tight. Never fallen out, even, you know, if anybody drives around a golf cart, you know, you can hit some bumps and stuff. Never fallen out on me. My phone has popped out of the cup holder before, but never my gun, and all the, you know, hundreds of times I've done this. So the course ranger makes that comment, well, make sure you keep that gun under control or something, or make sure you keep that gun safe or whatever. I said, oh, it's very safe. Or, you know, you aren't going to grab it, are you? I kind of made a joke to him. I said, you know, I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry, so I tend to carry everywhere I go. And he's like, oh, really? Oh, how many members you have? And I told him, about 10,000 members all across the state. He's like, oh, well, I don't carry. And just right when he made that comment, he goes something like, oh, I don't have a concealed carry, or I don't do that, or something. Maybe that was just, you know, I don't do that. I don't carry a gun or something. And just the way he said it was like, I wonder if I got a little ninny libby here, you know? So, but I didn't think much of it, again, because I played at the Broadlands 20 times in the past 2 years, and that's how I carry every single time I go there. Now, example, you pull up to the clubhouse when you're making the turn from the front nine to the back nine, you go and decide to pee or something, I pull it out of the cup holder, stick it in my pocket. I don't go walking away from the golf cart when it's by other people. But if anybody that ever plays golf, when you're playing golf, and especially at the Broadlands where it's the court, the holes are end to end, they don't back and forth like some really cramped courses, the holes parallel each other. And so then you could be encountering people kind of maybe going the other way. You hit your ball to the right on your hole and the hole coming back that is to the you know, right of your hold. They hit their ball to the right, and then your guys are both in the same rough, even though you're on different holes. You could potentially be right next to each other. It doesn't really happen at the Broadlands, but it could happen at other courses. It has happened at other courses. So anyway, we finished. That was the front nine. We're on probably hole number four when we talked to him. Finished the front nine. We go to the back nine. We play four or five holes in the back nine, six holes in the back nine. Then it gets dark. We go in, put the clubs away, throw them in the truck. I take the golf cart back up, leave it with the staff, the cart staff, said, have a great night, and went on our way. That was Sunday night. Well, then Monday morning rolls around. I'm sitting in my office working, and then my phone rings, and I see that it's North Prairie, which North Prairie is where the Broadlands is located, Broadlands Golf Course out in North Prairie. So I answer the phone, and it's the police chief of North Prairie. So when I first saw the caller ID and it said North Prairie, and I know the Broadlands is North Prairie because from calling the day before, that's what always shows up when you call out there, North Prairie, when I called to make the reservation. So I immediately thought, oh, this is the Broadlands calling. We must have lost something, you know, dropped something on the course or lost and found or left something in the cart or something. So they're calling. And as soon as I answered the phone, he said, oh, Nick, it's the police chief from North Prairie. And as soon as he said police chief, because I already knew he's from North Prairie because of caller ID, I said, oh, here we go. So I started chuckling. And I think I even made the comment before he even said something. I'm like, you're kidding me, right? And he's like, well, what do you mean by that? I said, I have a feeling I know why you're calling. And he's like, yeah, you know, I talked to Andy Spaulding, who is the operations manager, I guess also part owner of the Broadlands out this morning. And he wanted me to call you and let you know that they'd prefer that you not open carry when you're playing golf at the Broadlands. And I chuckled. I said, you know, I forget the police chief's name. I said, you know, that's fine. But I said, And he made the comment that, you know, I told Andy it's your private property. You know, you can post signs if you don't want people caring. And Andy said, oh, we don't want to post signs. We don't want to, no gun signs up and offend anybody. And I was like, oh, so instead they're just going to have the police chief making calls to customers. I said, you know, again, I forgot his name, the police chief. I said, I think it's kind of shitty when nothing I did was illegal. It's a customer service issue. If they don't want someone carrying a gun on their property, that's fine. They could have come up and talked to me. And so why don't you tell Andy? I think it's pretty shitty. He's like, well, I'm not going to tell you anything. I said, oh, so wait a minute. So Andy, because Andy, I guess when he told Andy that you're a private entity, Andy's like, well, can you act as an agent of the course and call? The Broadlands had my phone number because when you make the tee time reservation, you give your phone number to secure it. So he provided the police chief with my name and phone number. And so I just, I thought that, so I told him, I said, you know what, that's pretty shitty for you to be calling me during the workday. I think it's inappropriate for the police chief to be making this phone call anyway. If Andy wanted to call me and say, hey, Nick, we don't want you carrying out here, that's fine. I would have been irritated. I would have told Andy what I thought. So why don't you tell Andy that I think his customer service skills of how he treats a paying customer is pretty shitty. He's like, well, I'm not going to tell Andy. So wait a minute. You're an agent of the golf course to call me and tell me that they don't want me carrying there. But you're not going to, but if you're this agent, you can't have it both ways. If you're an agent of the course, then I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, and you can take that back to Andy. If you're not an agent of the course, why are you calling me? And I said to the police chief again, I'm not mad at you, but I think this whole situation is kind of crappy on behalf of the Broadlands. He goes, oh, I don't disagree with you. So, I mean, it was a pleasant, if not terse, conversation between me and the police chief from North Prairie. Because again, I just don't, and I'm happy to, Police chiefs used to call me all the time when there was legislative session going on, and they wanted to, you know, me to support. There was a bill that went through to allow police officers to carry on school grounds. They wanted me to support that. So the police chiefs have no problem. I've talked to police chiefs all the time when they want my help on something legislatively and politically. So I was pretty irritated. Then I called Andy and left a message, kind of a snippy message for Andy. I said, hey, Andy, I think it's kind of crappy that, you know, when you have a paying customer who's played 20 times at your golf course the past 2 years and more than that over the past 7 years, that you are going to, you know, call the police and have them do your, you know, make a request of your customer. So I went back and forth with Andy. I think at first Andy thought I was just some dumb redneck twirling a gun around while I was playing around a golf on his course. And after I told the starter, I told the ranger that was driving around, I told him I was the president of Wisconsin Carry. He talked to me. I was dressed nice with my fiance out there. It wasn't like I was some beer drinking hillbilly out on his court. You know, I don't know what he passed along to Andy or whatnot, but so I think when Andy found out, you know, who I was, his tone softened and he's like, well, Nick, I've got 108 residents, because there's 108 homes out there at the Broadlands that are golf course homes that are part of the homeowner association. I got to keep them happy and keep everybody safe. I said, Andy, you know, and then he says, you know, and I've got my concealed carry, you know, I conceal carry. I said, well, that's great, Andy. Congratulations. I worked on that legislation with Senator Galloway. And again, so his tone softened up when he figured out that I wasn't just some dumb redneck out there twirling a gun on my fingers playing golf. But so he's like, you know, I apologize. That wasn't handled properly. And I said, you know, here's the thing, Andy. If you don't want people carrying and you don't want to put up signs, because if you put up signs, you're going to piss off people even people who don't necessarily carry. Here, Hank says in the chat, I certainly hope that's the last round you played at that place. Oh, 100%. Like, I'm done. I will not go back there. And it kind of sucks because my fiance really likes that course. And I like the course. But no, I wouldn't feel welcome there. And I'm not giving my fucking money to someone who... So I said to Andy, the golf pro / head of operations out there, I said, you know, Andy, I think it's really shitty. I played your course 20 times in the past 2 years, more than that over the past 7 years. And if you've got a problem with one of your customers who's not doing anything illegal or anything wrong, I didn't threaten anybody. I didn't, you know, you should come up to them and just say, hey, and again, I don't recommend putting up signs because you're going to piss off your Broadlands is out there in North Prairie, Kettle Moraine. I mean, I'm sure it's a very conservative, it's Trump country. And so I said, Andy, why don't you, if you walk up, do the nice thing. If someone's there, if you ever see someone there open carrying, because I'm done playing at your course, I won't be back. But if for the next person down the road, have a polite conversation with a paying customer, treat them like a customer and say, hey, you know, we've got, and you can phrase it however you want. I mean, how I would phrase it is, hey, guy, look, we've got some ninnies here that are afraid of guns. It's a pro-gun place. The owner here, he concealed carries himself, but he's, while you're here on the course, would you mind just carrying discreetly? That's the term I told him the other day. I just ask your customers to carry discreetly. He's like, oh, yeah, that's what we'll do then. That's what we do. And again, so I'm not going back. I mean, I don't, you know, he'd have to do a better job because he apologized for handling the situation, but he'd have to invite me back. I mean, and let me carry the way I want to carry. And that's so that's the situation that occurred. But what's more interesting was then I thought it was an interesting encounter, and I thought it was something worthy of Here, Hank on the chat says, not only not welcome, but definitely not safe. And I'd have that all over various social media. If he doesn't have the balls to post, sign, or make it a policy, then he ought to admit that he doesn't have the balls to post it or make it. And he carries, but then he won't let patrons carry. Yeah, so he essentially wouldn't have minded if I conceal carry. But yeah, you said he would post it all over social media. So Hank, Hank, you've had to refresh your memory because you tuned into the show before, and I forget if you're from Wisconsin, or for some reason I thought you were from Missouri or Alabama, but remind me if you can hear Hank, who's on the chat. Anyway, so I did just what you said, Hank. I thought, you know what, let's let this guy, you know, I think businesses should have to suffer the consequences of their business decisions. And I'm going to let, as a courtesy, I'm going to let our membership know that the owner of the Broadlands is not so pro carry. I posted it to the Wisconsin Carry Facebook page, or I'm banned from fascist books. So I have my fiance from her account posted to the Wisconsin Carry Facebook page where there's, you know, whatever, 12,000 members. And she said, and I knew this would, I predicted it in my head. I already knew that this was going to be the response. And I kind of did it on purpose because I was going to make a point of it. So some of the comments, and I actually have my fiance screenshot some of them, and I read them from her phone while we're at the gym working out. But Exactly what I predicted from some people were, there was a couple people that thought it was offensive what the course operations manager did, what the golf pro did, that look, if he wanted to say something to me, he should have and he could have and should have, but to call the police, Hank says he does a Wednesday show, Global Patriot Radio, here on Blog Talk Radio. Says he spent his summers in northern Wisconsin, grew up in the Chicago area. Where are you at now, though, Hank? What state are you from? I was curious. So anyway, so I posted on the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group. My fiance posted for me. And as I expected, there was a number of maybe three or four replies that were something like, yeah, this is why you should have just put it in your bag. You know, you should have. This is why other people. This is why I conceal carry. No one knows any better or worse that I'm carrying or not. And again, I totally expected that. Totally expect that. And I won't say I did it on purpose for that reason, but the real reason I posted it was because I thought, and I suggested to people, I said, hey, why don't you go on social media, southeastern U.S. Florida. Okay, excellent. Hank's down in the southeast part of the country. So I suggested that, you know, hey, why don't you pop by the Broadlands Facebook page? Because, see, I think if you make a – I'm not out here to destroy the guy's business, and certainly it's not going to destroy the guy's business – but you just give them enough heartburn that they don't do it again to someone else. Just teach them a lesson. Let them know that, look, you screw over a gun owner and you're going to get some backlash. So don't do it. So as expected, there was some of the Second Amendment light, selfish types in the Wisconsin Carry fascist book group who are like, oh, you should have just put it in your bag, or, oh, you should have just, this is why I conceal carry. No one knows any better. And then other people are like, oh, if you're leaving the gun in the cup holder of your golf cart, a couple Karens on the in the fascist book group for Wisconsin Carry on Facebook. Well, if you're leaving your gun in the cup holder of the golf cart, that's not in your possession. It's not in your control. And that's against the firearm safety rules. So I thought, okay, let's address these. First off, some of these people have probably never been on a golf course. When I'm golfing, and again, if I go up to the clubhouse, I pull the gun out of the cup holder and shove it in my pocket. When you're golfing, if it's in the cup holder, you're riding in this golf cart with it. Maybe you've got a playing partner who is a friend or a relative, in my case, it was a fiance, who is with you. So you certainly don't need to worry about them grabbing it. And then you're generally the odds of someone getting closer to your golf cart than you on a golf course are pretty much zero. If you're in your golf cart and you're close to someone else, you're generally sitting in the cart. If you have to drive by someone else whose ball came onto your fairway or something, you're generally sitting in your cart. Once you get up close to your green, that's where you don't usually ever encounter other people because the greens are separated from the other holes, you know, by usually trees and such. And it just, you're, even when you're on the green putting, your cart is close to your green and you're generally the closest person to it. Not to mention the fact that it's a fucking golf course. You're not, it's not like you're parked at the parking lot of Sonic drive-thru with your convertible, with your gun sitting in the center console, and you go walking up and down for a car show away from your car. It's not like that at all. You're on a golf course where there's virtually nobody around you within, you know, you're the closest person always in proximity to that gun. So I don't think that, in my opinion, and just my opinion, other people are welcome, and the FUD ninnies on the Wisconsin Carry, the couple of them in the Wisconsin Carry fascist book group are welcome to have their opinion. I don't think there's any, it's certainly not illegal. 100%, that's a fact. It's not illegal the way that I was carrying. I don't think it's unsafe the way that I was carrying by any stretch. And, the golf pro from Broadlands made the comment, well, you know, someone could come up and grab that gun. I said, yeah, Andy, and someone could come up and grab my putter and swing that and hit me over the head. He's like, well, that's true. I said, Andy, you're just sounding like an anti-gun guy with all your objections to, you know. I said, and here's the other thing, Andy, no one complained. I've played at your course 20 times in the last 2 years, probably 30 or 40 over the last 7 years. No one's ever complained, Andy. The only person who complained was your ranger. So that's kind of fresh, Andy, that the none of your patrons had a problem with it, but because one of your employees took issue with it, then you're going to put the ninny proclivities of one of your employees over a paying customer's. That's a new thing for me, Andy. I mean, I worked at McDonald's my first job, and I can tell you that they would have never put the ninny proclivities of me as a cashier at McDonald's over a paying customer's. The customer came first. So again, nothing I did was illegal, nothing I did was unsafe, but the ninny proclivities of your ranger on the golf course, who was the only person that saw it and the only person that had a problem with it, now you've lost a paying customer and a good paying customer for life for it. But moreover, you've just broken a fundamental principle of business and customer service of putting your employees' feelings, one employee's feelings, over a patron's, you know, business. And so the other interesting thing is, and I forgot to mention this when I was on the phone with Andy, but in the state of Wisconsin, we have a law that says if you allow someone to carry, you are immune from liability for anything that happens as a result of that decision. The decision to allow someone to carry on your property, on your grounds, you are immune from liability for anything that happens as a result of that decision. So let's just say that Andy's worst nightmare came true. Let's just say that Nick Clark, the president of Wisconsin Carry, who was open carrying on the Broadlands golf course, triple bogeyed a hole, flew into a fit of rage, pulled the revolver out of his cup holder, and shot the next three foursomes that he came across in the golf course in a fit of fairway rage. The Broadlands is, by state law, the Broadlands is immune from liability if that would happen. Now, obviously, I'm being ridiculous. That would never happen. But even if it did, the Broadlands would be immune from liability for their decision to allow carry. If the Broadlands prohibits carry, they lose that immunity. So let's say the opposite. Let's say some wacko decides to go on a shooting rampage and they do something like I said out there. And someone like me, who would have otherwise been carrying, but for the fact that the Broadlands told them they couldn't, was killed. The estate of that person could sue the Broadlands because, look, this person's a concealed carry license holder and a regular carrier. They used to carry when they frequented the Broadlands, but because the Broadlands told them that they couldn't, they no longer carry. And again, I will never play the Broadlands again, but anybody who would have then not been carrying because they've been asked not to, or let's say, I mean, and here's the thing, you know, with the gun tucked away in your golf bag, it's not very accessible. Not very accessible if there's a wild animal attack or any other kind of attack. And so even the fact that you couldn't access your gun because the Broadlands chose to prohibit carry for me. Now, they haven't prohibited carry from anybody else because they have no sign. So anybody else there carrying, concealing, or wherever, they wouldn't know. But the Broadlands, if I was to continue to play there, would have lost immunity from liability. So if this was a business decision, and he kind of alluded to, well, I checked with the ownership group, and if this was a business decision, you know, what's best for the course? Well, that's certainly not best for the course, because nothing is better for a business than immunity from liability. So it wasn't a smart business decision from a insurance standpoint, wasn't a smart business decision from a liability standpoint, wasn't a smart business decision from a customer service standpoint, because again, nobody's ever been offended that I was carrying out there. No patrons have ever complained. And I've played with, I don't think they're members, but there's members of the homeowners association. I once played with a guy, his name was Ryan. I'm not going to say his last name, but I remember his last name because he gave me his card. He's a homeowner out there at the Broadlands, has a golf course on the second fairway. Really nice house, close to the second green, and played with him and a friend of his, and we had a good time. I was carrying; he had no problem with it. He didn't complain. So at the Broadlands, you're a member of the homeowners association, the Broadlands Homeowners Association. He didn't complain to to Andy Spaulding. Oh, there's a guy out here with a gun in his car. No, I mean, you know. So, it's it was a stupid business decision. It was a stupid customer service decision. And but here's all these guys in the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group. When I say all these, a handful, four or five, who are sitting there saying things like, oh, you shouldn't have done it. It wasn't safe. And again, I challenge that it wasn't safe. I think it was completely safe. I challenge the fact that the solution is that I should have just put it in my bag. But here's something more interesting is if you ask me, look, open carry has been legal and common for a decade plus, and we still have businesses calling the police on a lawfully carrying citizen. That's the biggest thing. If Andy had come to me and said, hey, Nick, we'd prefer you don't open carry. Would you please, I'm a concealed carry holder myself. Would you please stow it in your bag? I would have grunted and groaned and pissed and moaned, but I would have threw it in my bag and went on with it and told him I thought it was, you know, petty of him. But I wouldn't have brought it up to the Wisconsin Carry membership. But to turn over the name of a paying customer to the chief of police and have the chief of police call on behalf of a private business, that's just shitty. That's just shitty. It was certainly an attempt to be intimidating. I mean, Andy, because Andy had my phone number. Andy could have called me and said, hey, Nick, you know, you were out yesterday. You made a reservation. That's how I got your phone number off your reservation. We'd prefer that you not carry when you're – or open carry when you're out here. You know, if you choose to throw it in your bag, you know, we're no the wiser, but we prefer you don't carry openly. Again, I would have pissed a moment. I would have said it to Andy right there on the phone. I said, you know, Andy, here's the deal. Like, nobody has ever complained except your – and then I did say that. I said, Andy, the only person who even noticed was your ranger, and the only time he noticed is because he was going around initiating conversations with people. And no other patrons ever saw – so, and Andy agreed. He's like, yeah, that was the only person who saw it. But just this notion that so that's the issue here. The issue isn't that because if Andy had said it, I wouldn't have even said that to our membership. Yeah, I got asked not to carry at a private business. It's a private business. I would have said it. But the fact that he enlisted the help of the police to try to intimidate me, call me, you know, whether he was trying to intimidate me or not, you'd have to know that that's a pretty intimidating thing to say. And again, I wasn't intimidated, but most people I think would be to make the chief of police call. It's more intimidating than just having the golf course pro call. But on the Wisconsin Carry, the friendly fire that you take from other so-called pro-gun folks. And I said, this is why conservatives never win. You know, half the people there in the thread, and again, 11,000 members, maybe 200, 300 people saw the thread and five people made their little friendly fire comments. But half of people stand there and wring their hands and say, oh, you should have concealed carry. You should have put it in your bag. It never would have happened. Liberals don't do this shit. Let's see. Let's make a comparable scenario. Let's say a liberal goes into a private business, a restaurant in Waukesha County, very conservative area. How about this? A liberal goes into a restaurant in North Prairie, where the Brothers is, very conservative area. Liberal walks into the North Prairie diner with a Black Lives Matter shirt on, and some other patrons take issue with it. It starts an argument, and the next day, the business owner calls the police chief, gives the police chief the customer's contact information, and has the police chief call this law-abiding citizen and ask them not to wear their Black Lives Matter shirt, not to wear political shirts inside of the diner because it just causes a ruckus. Now, I didn't cause a ruckus. The only person I offended was the ranger. So this isn't even a comparable situation. Let's say a liberal goes into a private diner in North Prairie with a Black Lives Matter shirt on, and the busser that clears the tables didn't like the shirt and went to the owner and said, yeah, there was a guy in here with a Black Lives Matter shirt on, and it just, that offends me. And so then the next day, the owner of the diner calls the North Prairie police chief and asks him to call that customer and ask that customer not to wear a Black Lives Matter t-shirt into his diner anymore because they don't want political apparel worn in their diner. If that had happened to a liberal, and a liberal goes on social media and shares that story to a group of, you know, Black Lives Matter group on Facebook, I'm telling you 100% of the other Black Lives Matter folks on that Facebook group would have been outraged. 100% of them would have been angered to action. None of them would have said, well, you should just, that's why I saved the Black Lives Matter t-shirts for, you know, marches and protest rallies. You're not going to a rally, you're going to dinner. You don't need to wear a political t-shirt to dinner. You know, save those for the marches and rallies. Liberals would never do that. They don't throw their own under the bus. Even if there's a liberal in that Facebook group for the Black Lives Matter Facebook group who says, yeah, I don't wear my Black Lives Matter t-shirt when I'm out and about because I don't want to stir up, you know, if I'm going into a restaurant or a bar, I'm not there to stir up, you know, debates and arguments and whatever. But I wear it just to the rallies, to the Black Lives Matter parades and marches and riots and loots. But there might be, but even those people in that group that might themselves not wear their Black Lives Matter shirt out and about outside of their political rallies or riots, they would certainly be outraged that someone was asked to leave a restaurant because they had a Black Lives Matter t-shirt on. Because liberals, Democrats, they stand for their cause. Gun owners love to wring their hands and throw each other on the bus every time they get. And I'm just to say, if we don't stand together, you either got to stand together or get ready to kneel on your own. Because can you imagine, when people were pushing, this is not a commentary on gay rights, it's a comparison to the strategy. When someone was, if a gay couple was making or public display of affection in a restaurant and they were asked to leave, would anybody else who supported gay rights say, well, the solution here is to, you know, keep that stuff for your own bedroom, keep that stuff for at home? No. They don't throw each other under the bus like that. They stand up for their cause. They stand up for what they believe in. Again, you know, I'm not passing an endorsement or a criticism of gay rights. I'm just, they were all in. And that strategy worked. But not pro-gun folks. Pro-gun folks are so quick to throw. Think about the selfishness of someone who, well, I conceal carry. So this would have never happened to me. Wash my hands of this incident. Oh, Nick shouldn't have done that. I mean, liberals wouldn't do that. But conservatives, pro-gun folks, they love to find an excuse to throw someone under the bus. Now, and even if you're not of the, you know, I wasn't asking people to go out and attend a rally. I said, you know, make a comment on the guy's Facebook page. Make a comment on the Broadlands. If a dozen people had made a comment on the Broadlands Facebook page, that would have got his attention. Like, oh, I didn't just piss off one person. I pissed off dozens of people. Yeah. And other people are like, oh, we're not sure. I don't want to ruin someone's business. I wasn't trying to ruin his business. And this wouldn't have ruined his business. It was just a little shot across the bow to say, look, Andy, You piss off gun owners, you're going to piss off a lot more people than you think. Think twice next time. And even with that said, think about what you're really saying. None of your customers were offended. One of your employees was, and you lost a customer over it. So anyway, it's just interesting how so many pro-gun folks will throw each other under the bus, fail to, none of these pro-gun folks that I just conceal carry, I would have solved the problem. Didn't bother them at all that the police, chief of police of a little small town in Western Waukesha County was enlisted to call a law-abiding paying customer of a business. Nope, that didn't faze them at all. They were just so quick to that selfish mindset that, well, that's why I conceal carry. This would have never happened to me. Like, as if that's the solution. That's what we got here. And this happens, you know, across the board. Conservatives just do that. And that's why, like, I don't want to be a liberal, but I envy liberals sometimes because liberals, man, they stand together. They don't break ranks. They stand, they fight. Even for the rights they don't exercise, damn, they stand up and fight for them. You know, I don't care if you open carry or not. You should stand up and support people's right to. It wasn't even about open carry. I could have been concealed carrying and the police chief or and the course, you know, maybe they saw me print or something. Maybe they saw me at my car. The ranger was driving by and I was putting my gun in my golf bag and he saw it. The open carry aspect of it has nothing to do with the bigger picture of a private business enlisting the police to call a law-abiding paying customer and do their, quote, dirty work for them. But, you know, it's so disappointing. It's so disappointing that gun owners are like that, that they don't stand together. And if you only support don't call yourself a Second Amendment supporter if the only time you support right to carry is in the manner that you choose to carry and how and where you choose to carry, because that's just selfishness. And it doesn't take principles to be selfish. It just takes selfishness. If all you care about is your little how you do things, you're not principled. It takes no courage and no principle to stand for your own behaviors, to stand up for stuff that you like to do. It does take courage and principle to stand up for rights that you don't exercise on behalf of someone else. To stand up for a right that you don't exercise. Look, I don't open carry my AR-15 down the road when I go walk the dog or when I go for a walk in downtown Milwaukee, but I damn well stand up and support the right of people who do. Support the rights that you don't exercise. If you ever expect someone to support the rights that you do exercise. Next thing I had here was a story from Newsmax. And this is, we'll see where this goes with the courts, but Missouri passed some pretty strong, maybe some of the strongest Second Amendment sanctuary type gun laws in the country. Missouri passed a gun law or passed some gun laws essentially nullifying federal gun laws. And now, of course, my computer is being super slow. I'm trying to open up this link to the story from that I had here and get this. I was going to read some of the story, but it's tending. Computer is crawling along here like a tortoise. Yeah, I don't know if this. I'm going to have to. Maybe I can get it quicker by going to Google. See if this will take me there. Okay, here I found it. Okay, Missouri. This is from Newsmax, their website, newsmax.com. Department of Justice, Missouri state gun law is unconstitutional. This is from Wednesday. President Joe Biden's Justice Department is stepping up its fight against a new state law in Missouri that aims to invalidate many federal gun regulations, saying the measure has impeded law enforcement efforts to work with state and local police and is also unconstitutional. On Wednesday, the Justice Department filed a statement of interest in an ongoing lawsuit in Cole County, Missouri, saying the state's Second Amendment Preservation Act, also known as HB 85, should be declared unconstitutional and that the court should issue an injunction barring its enforcement. Quote, HB 85 is legally invalid under the United States Constitution Supremacy Clause. The state of Missouri has no power to nullify federal laws, the department's filing says. In an accompanying sworn statement, ATF and explosives special agent in charge Frederick Winston said the new law has already had a significant impact on the ATF's partnership with state and local law enforcement offices, noting that 12 of 53 state and local – have a good night, Hank. Thanks for catching the podcast live here. Noting that 12 of 53 state and local officers have withdrawn from participation in ATF task forces since the law's enactment. A hearing in the case, which was filed by the city of St. Louis against the state of Missouri, is slated for Thursday. The Justice Department's court filings marks the latest move by Attorney General Merrick Garland to quash executive orders or laws in red states that clash with the enforcement of federal laws. So this thing goes on, the story goes on, but you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Again, the rank hypocrisy of liberals, because when liberals do things like pass sanctuary cities and stuff like that, oh, that's just their right, and that's what democracy looks like, and then the federal government to come in would be heavy-handed and interfering with local control. But yet when a conservative issue type thing, Second Amendment sanctuary type thing is there, the Justice Department from the liberal administration of the Obama-Harris administration is all over it. We'll see what happens with this. We've said for a long time here, I've said, and it was Wisconsin Carrie's opinion that the actual legal protections that Second Amendment sanctuary counties, cities, states, whatnot provide is questionable. We don't know what the real legal teeth behind those will be. It hasn't been challenged in court, hasn't been litigated. HBL hasn't been litigated. But there's a lot of value to those independently because the Second Amendment sanctuary movement, especially here in Wisconsin, that's starting with a county by county movement. One, it puts these politicians at the county level on record. It puts county level politicians on record of either supporting the Second Amendment or not. Now, certainly there's some like in Waukesha County, I forget the guy's name, but the Waukesha County board chair, he grudgingly went along with the Second Amendment and voted for the Second Amendment sanctuary resolution that was in Waukesha County. But there was a few people that voted against it. And this is because the county boards, those are kind of sometimes the farm team, people that run and serve on the county boards. You know, at some point they tend to turn around and run for state assembly, or they tend to turn around and run for maybe mayors, which eventually they make their way to an office that does have more to say with gun control legislation, with gun rights legislation. And so it's nice here in Wisconsin, the recall database has been the Verify the Recall back when people that signed the Scott Walker recall, that's been a very valuable tool. I mean, I still reference it to this day. Someone goes to run for school board in New Berlin, and I know I'm not the only one. There's several people, myself included, that the first thing we do is we go to that I Verify the Recall and we look up these people and say, hey, because everybody in New Berlin tells you they're a conservative. Everybody running for the school board in New Berlin likes to say they're conservative. And if they can't say they're conservative, well, I'm fiscally conservative. That's what the liberals like to say. Well, but I'm fiscally conservative. And everybody thinks they're fiscally conservative. To a liberal, fiscal conservatism just means they think they don't waste money. They think they spend money wisely. That's what a liberal thinks fiscally conservative is. They're not, because they'll spend money on all kinds of things that government has no business spending money on. But to them, if they think it's a good spend, they think that's fiscally conservative. And it's not. Fiscally conservative means you let people keep their own money. You only spend money on the core services the government should provide, not on all kinds of entitlements and social spending and all this other stuff and ever-increasing percentages, letting government spending grow faster than private sector spending and all those things. That to a liberal, fiscal conservative just means you spend money wisely. And that's a totally subjective standard. But that Verify the Recall database, we still look up people on that when they go running for the New Berlin School Board claiming that they're conservative. We go look them up. Did you sign the Scott Walker recall? The Second Amendment sanctuary movement, I've said, and we've worked with the Grandsons of Liberty on this, Wisconsin Grandsons of Liberty. The ultimate goal is to have them have this database created that shows who on the county boards didn't support the Second Amendment sanctuary movement. So we've got them on record when they do go to run for higher office, when those county supervisors go to run for state assembly. We know whether they did or didn't support the gun rights bills when they had the chance. Even a gun rights bill that maybe didn't have a great deal of teeth. Because again, we don't know. These Second Amendment sanctuary bills, we don't know in terms of the actual legal protections that they'll provide. It may be zero. So if you can't support a gun bill that might be just symbolic and have no real implications, are you going to support a pro-gun bill when you get to Madison for, say, school grounds carry or something? Certainly not. If you can't even take a symbolic vote in support of pro-gun stuff, you're not going to be an advocate and a champion for gun rights when you get to Madison. Next story from this week, troubling, disappointing, not at all surprising. The prosecutors in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, they want to get donor names. Apparently they found a new video where it showed Kyle Rittenhouse sitting watching some supposed shoplifters exit a CVS store, and Kyle Rittenhouse can be heard saying that he wished he had his rifle so he could shoot them. That's what the prosecutors are saying on this short video that was, I guess, formally posted to YouTube. It's a part of a motion that they filed. They want to use this video clip as evidence in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. And then they also want to, I guess this happened about 2 weeks before the protests in August where Kyle Rittenhouse used his gun in self-defense. But the prosecutors in the Kyle Rittenhouse case also want to have the names of all the donors to Kyle Rittenhouse's legal defense fund. Apparently they want to make sure that nobody ends up on the jury that was a supporter that donated money to Kyle Rittenhouse. And this is kind of fresh because did they ask the jury in Minnesota that was going to be on Derek Chauvin's case, the police officer from Minnesota who was arresting George Floyd, did they ask the jury pool in that case if anybody had ever donated to Black Lives Matter? Did they ask Black Lives Matter for a list of their donor list? Because they may have asked the jurors. But did they ask for Black Lives Matter to turn over their donor lists? Did they ask for anybody who's whatever the donor organizations to George Floyd that were set up for George Floyd, did they ask those organizations for their donor list so they could cross-reference it? Because that's what the prosecutor says. The prosecutor says he wants to cross-reference and make sure that none of the jurors were donors to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense fund. But this is a different approach and a different standard than has been used in other cases. Again, I use George Floyd, for example. They may well have. In fact, I think they did ask the jury members if they were part of the Black Lives Matter organization and things like that. But that was only of the people that were in the jury pool. I think it's a fair question if they wanted to ask prospective jurors, did you donate to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense? Fair game. You want jurors who haven't already formed an opinion. That's the whole point of jury selection, is a jury that will make its decision based upon the evidence presented at trial. If someone has donated to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense fund, you've already made a decision. You've already come to a conclusion. Obviously, or you wouldn't have donated to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense fund. So I think it's fair game to ask prospective jurors, have you donated to Kyle Rittenhouse's? Have you made a decision in this case? Have you donated to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense fund? Have you donated to Black Lives Matter to Black Lives Matter? I think those are all fair questions to ask of the prospective jurors, but not to go to seek out the donor. And we had one. We had a guy in the Derek Chauvin case who was a Black Lives Matter activist, went to D.C. to protest. I mean, that's a pretty committed activist if you're going to fly all the way, drive all the way, fly all the way out to D.C. to participate in Black Lives Matter protests. But here's the real thing. You and I both know the reason they want that list is because that list is going to get leaked. The list of people who donated to Kyle Rittenhouse is going to get leaked, guaranteed, full stop. It will get leaked. And then the woke cancel culture mob can do what the woke cancel culture mob does and go after people, even if it doesn't get leaked publicly. And I believe it would get leaked publicly. It'll get leaked privately. And that will be used to squash the activism of anybody who, and it's also just an intimidation thing. If people think that if they donate to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense fund, that someday that's going to be made public, people are going to be chilled from donating to stuff like that. That's the whole point of this. The Democrats play every angle. Democrats are like Asians with food. Like, and I can say this because I have an Asian friend, and Asians, like, I think American Indians used to be known for this in like the colonial days of like using, when you kill a buffalo or you kill a deer, you use everything from it. It's out of respect for the animal. You know, you use the hoofs for something, you use the horns for something, you use the skin for something, you the meat you eat. I mean, just every part of it, the tendons you use to make, lashings to tie your arrowhead to the shaft of a stick. Asians, I mean, they use the feet from chicken to make broth for soup. I know because I was at Chinatown in Chicago at a restaurant and I'm eating this soup and there's these things in there. I'm like, what is this? They're like, oh, that's from the feet of the chicken. They use every bit of it. Democrats are like that. They use every bit of something for political advantage. They use every morsel of a political corpse for, they'll use this donor list for Kyle Rittenhouse to, one, for certain, make sure they don't get anybody that's sympathetic on the jury. Two, to leak it, to hopefully leak it publicly so they can publicly try to shame people who supported Kyle Rittenhouse. If they can't get it out publicly, they'll certainly leak it privately so that inside of the big tech Politburo where they, and I'm convinced they do. I'm convinced big tech has a database where they cross share information about people that have been kicked off of one platform or another for whatever reason, so that they, you know, if you get kicked off of Facebook for your political stuff, they can also, YouTube can reference that and get you off of YouTube. I'm convinced that exists. But yeah, that's what's going on here. They want to use that information, one, certainly to keep people off the jury who have bias, two, to suppress, to chill people from donating in the future to Kyle Rittenhouse now or other people in other situations in the future. For anything that might be construed as a conservative issue, a conservative case where a conservative platform issue is at stake. Meanwhile, I mean, you can pay the bail for people who got caught rioting and burning shit and arsonists for Black Lives Matter. And that's just, you know, good, culturally aware, charity, but don't dare donate to a conservative issue, whether it's Kyle Rittenhouse or, a pro-gun or the NRA, or don't you dare express public support or you'll get banned from Fascist Book. And that's probably one of the reasons why I was banned from Fascist Book, for public comments supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse. Democrats, it's an all hands on deck. Liberals, progressive, it's an all hands on deck, and everything they can do in every way they can do it to win. And it's asymmetrical warfare because conservatives won't do it. Look, I get the chief of police from North Prairie calling me on behalf of a private business, and you can't even get conservatives to be outraged over it. Pro-gun folks to even be outraged. I mean, some were, but you know, there's a good number that weren't even outraged by that. I got another story for you. So my daughter, Kayla, this was shocking to me. I wish I would have been there. My daughter, Kayla, went to Mayfair Mall with my fiance, Kim. I call her my daughter. you know, it's my fiance's daughter, but I call them my daughters. I don't have daughters. That's what I call my girls. I'm not your only dad, but you're my only daughters. So, you know, I'm your stepdad. They call me stepdad or refer to me as their stepdad, but they're my daughters. Cause they're the only daughters I got. And I tell them that. I say, you know what? And I, even when they don't like it, when I'm punishing them or reprimanding them or not even punishing or reprimanding, but when I'm, you know, using my life's experiences to offer them guidance and advice on things that they may not particularly enjoy, giving them a little bit of tough love, I tell them, I say, hey, look, you guys, easiest thing for me to do would be to just buy you guys everything you need, you know, do everything for you, but I'm not making you a better person. And I'm not your only stepdad, but you're my only daughters, and I'm going to do it like I would if you were my own daughters. And that's how I treat them. So my daughter Kayla was at Mayfair Mall with my fiance Kim. I think they were going to the Apple store for some stupid shit, for a MacBook or something. And they're at Mayfair Mall, who, for those of you who aren't from the Milwaukee area, is a mall, very popular mall, but a mall very prone to problems with, you know, some wilding years back with kids. I don't know if you'd call them riots, but some out of control. I think there was a few instances where there was some looting at, I don't know if it was at Macy's or one of the larger, kids just ran through the store, ransacking it, stealing stuff. I mean, so they put all kinds of measures in place. They've got, you know, curfews. They've got minors must be accompanied by a parent. It rules, just all kinds of stuff. It's why I don't go there. It's just, I think it's a cesspool. I mean, it's a very nice mall, very popular mall. There's a Nordstrom's there, but there's always some, they prohibit guns. It's just, I avoid Mayfair as much as humanly possible. So my fiance and my daughter go there, and some male rent-a-cop, rent-a-pig with a lab, I don't want to call it a service animal, a lab. See, it's not a police dog because they've got a, some kind of tactical canine at Mayfair Mall. So this male rent-a-pig with this lab comes up near my fiance Kim and my daughter Kayla. And supposedly the dog alerts. The dog goes and he's sniffing around. He goes and he sits right in between my fiance Kim and my daughter Kayla. And then the rent-a-pig says to Kim, indicating that the dog has just alerted to her, if she has any firearms on her. Now, at this point, I would tell the guy to pound sand, but my fiance, she's a rule follower. She says, no, I don't have any on me. And then the rent-a-pig says, do you have any guns in your house? Again, I would have blown my lid. I said, that's none of your fucking business if I have guns in my house or not. Who the fuck do you think you are? But Kim said, well, yeah, we have guns in the house. And then the rent-a-pig says, oh, well, that's why the dog is alerting on you. I don't buy it. Maybe. I don't buy it. The fact that this dog is alerting on Kim because she has guns in her house. I mean, Kim, she doesn't care even on a regular basis. I know dogs have great noses, but I just don't buy it. But then they ask if they wand them. She said, do you mind if we wand you? And Kim says, yeah, that's fine. Again, I would have said, hell fuck no. But they wand my daughter, Kayla, my 18-year-old daughter who's there with her. Kayla, they don't wand Kim, they wand Kayla. And I just, again, I'm certain that it's within your right to leave. I mean, I suppose if they, you know, they can wand you. And I don't know the laws intimately enough to say, but this is what it's come to. You go to Mayfair Mall and you get fucking wanded by the goddamn rent-a-pigs. I mean, it just, again, I wish I was there because I would have put a stop to it. The problem was, if I would have been in Mayfair, I probably would have been carrying, because if there's any place where I feel the need to carry, it's Mayfair. Now that I put this out there in the public discourse, which also reminds me, I'm saying these things out in public that could someday come back to haunt me if I, the situation with Kyle Rittenhouse and that comment he made on a video 15 days before, you know, that's why I tell people, you got to be careful what you put on social media. Some of the people used to post on Wisconsin Carry before I was banned from Fascist Book. You know, someone does that at my house and they're going to be met with a barrage of lead, or, you know, that stuff will be used against you. I don't even put the sign up, and some people have them. You've seen in the decals people put on the door, "We don't call 911," and there's a picture of a revolver pointing right at you. I mean, yeah, I think they're funny. I think they're, you know, and I kind of chuckle at the spirit of the, but that's the kind of stuff that you, if you ever do have a home break-in and you shoot the person, that's the kind of stuff that gets used against you. So here I am talking about Mayfair Mall and, again, things that could potentially be used against me, although I don't really know. It would just be trespassing. But look, if I was to go to Mayfair, I would carry. I think it used to be the case if you walk in Barnes & Noble, because if you walk in the mall entrances, there's the no-gun signs, the no-gun postings. But if you walk in Barnes & Noble, Barnes & Noble didn't have the no-gun sign on their door. And then you could walk through Barnes & Noble and get into the mall with plausible deniability that you never saw the no-gun sign. So that's the way that when I used to go to Mayfair, and I haven't been to Mayfair in years, and I have no intention of going there anytime soon for any reason. But I would, if I was to go there, if my daughter said, "Can you please take me to the Apple Store? I have to get my phone fixed," and that was the only place to go, I'd be going through Barnes & Noble into the mall. And again, maybe Barnes & Noble is now posted. I don't know. But yeah, the dog alerts on me and they ask me if I have a gun. I'd say it's none of your business. And I would, here's how I would do it too. Because if you say no, you just sound guilty. I'd say, you know, I'm a libertarian type Republican and I really believe in civil rights. And I don't think you have any right to be asking these questions. And maybe they do have the right because you're in the building. But I find that offensive for you to be asking me these questions. So I really don't say no. I just make an issue of my being offended by the question. I don't know. I don't know if I buy it that the lab was really alerting to Kim or not, or if this rent-a-pig just wanted to harass her and my daughter. And that's what he decided to do. Last thing I was going to hit up here tonight. There's two stories. See, my brother listens to the show, and I was going to do Simone Biles too. But that's kind of an old story because the Olympics have been over for a few weeks. Because my brother and I were kind of going back and forth. I made the point on the show that Simone Biles, you know, I didn't like the criticism that some people were lobbing her way, saying it was kind of like, could you imagine Tom Brady not coming out after halftime of the Super Bowl? They were drawing that comparison that's like Simone Biles withdrawing for the Olympics was akin to Tom Brady not coming out after halftime because he had a bad first half or he wasn't feeling good. He just wouldn't do it. He'd play through the pain. He'd play even if he wasn't at his top. I said, that's not exactly the same thing. So anyway, because, you know, if Tom Brady is off his game, he throws an interception or he gets sacked. If Simone Biles can't do her inverted twisting aerials, if you're a little bit off your game, you might, you know, land and take a step. If you're a lot off your game, you might land on your head and die because that's how dangerous some of those maneuvers are. But that said, I still made the comment that I think it's fair to say that then I don't think she could be considered the best ever when she couldn't handle the stress or whatever it was. But again, that was a couple of weeks ago, so maybe I've only got 11 minutes left in the 10 minutes left of the podcast. My brother says that he still thinks she could be construed as the best ever. I have some supporting evidence for mine, but I really feel like I should stick to my other two topics here, and which then makes me punt off Simone Biles till even later, which is even further past the Olympics. But nonetheless, here's what I'll do. I got 10 minutes left in the live broadcast. I don't think there's any live listeners in tonight, so maybe I'll just do it, go over time, and do it anyway with the podcast portion, which for you guys listening on the podcast will be seamless. You won't even know the difference. There's a story in Breitbart about a judge ordering the release of a man who had already bought the gun used to kill a police officer. Again, the story from Breitbart, U.S. magistrate judge ordered alleged firearm straw purchaser Jamel Danzy released from federal custody on Wednesday. Breitbart News noted that federal charges were brought against 29-year-old Danzy on Monday for allegedly buying a handgun, then passing it to 21-year-old Imante Morgan. Morgan then allegedly shot and killed Chicago police officer Ella French with that handgun on Saturday night. CBS is now reporting that Danzy has been ordered released from federal custody on a $4,500 bond. U.S. Magistrate Judge Jeffrey Gilbert ordered Danzy's release, noting his lack of criminal record and his, quote, job as a teacher's aide in Merrillville, Indiana. In addition to purchasing the gun used in Saturday's shooting, the car at the center of the fatal traffic stop was also allegedly owned by Danzy. So anyway, so this guy gets arrested for being the straw purchaser for a gun used to kill a cop. Judge orders him released from federal custody on a $4,500 bond, which is nothing. This Jamel Danzy is a, you know, what is he, a 29-year-old African-American dude who bought the gun and gave it to a 21-year-old African-American dude who then shot and killed a Chicago police officer a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now. Okay, so tuck that away in the back of your head for a second. Now, the second story I want to talk about is a story from WISN, Channel 12 here in Milwaukee from last week, and it was about a police officer who got charged and convicted of vehicular homicide, which I don't know if that's vehicular manslaughter, but anyway, he wasn't drunk, but he ran a red light. He wasn't paying attention. He was in a squad car. It's a cop, was in a squad car, ran a red light, and ended up killing a guy. I guess his light was red for like 10 seconds or 12 seconds, but he wasn't paying attention, drove through a red light because I don't know if he was looking down at his mobile data terminal or at his phone or something, but he ends up killing a guy and gets sentenced to 6 months in jail. What ends up happening, and part of it's because of COVID and part of it's because of this, he requests to be jailed in another county, because if he was jailed in Milwaukee, he could potentially run into people that he had arrested. So the judge agrees and lets him serve, and so he chooses to serve in the Ozaukee County Jail. Well, Ozaukee County also, and he was given Huber privileges. Huber privileges means you can serve your time getting out during the day to go to work, but you got to report there in the evenings, and you essentially stay overnight. You're in jail with work release, essentially. Well, so what ended up happening is this cop gets assigned, or he's going to get booked in up at the Ozaukee County Jail. I believe it was Ozaukee County. Well, between COVID and their policy up there, he reports to start serving his sentence at the Huber facility. Instead, they stick a GPS monitoring bracelet on him. 45 minutes later, send him back out the door, and he's back. You know, he's on GPS monitoring. So essentially, he has to stay. He's on home confinement. Well, this just has the woman whose boyfriend or husband was killed by this cop in the vehicle accident. Again, it wasn't intentional. I think it was manslaughter because he wasn't intentionally trying. She's all pissed, and it's an insult, and it's an affront, and it's this terrible thing, and it's because the cop is white and her husband was black, or boyfriend was black, and black lives don't matter, and it's all, and they made it this big racial thing on WISN, when the fact of the matter is it was just between COVID and they were keeping people out of the jail and the policy up there. Do you know how many people get released on GPS monitoring for way more serious, more violent crimes? Do you know how many times a black offender has been given no jail time for violent crimes? I mean, but now because this guy's a cop and he's white and the person that he killed is black, the WISN makes this huge deal about it. And it's just this race baiting bullshit that drives me crazy. Because again, I just read you that story a minute ago about a guy who bought the gun used to murder a police officer, that was 100% intentional act. It wasn't, you know, driving, inattentive driving, and you end up killing someone, you get charged with vehicular manslaughter. It was, you bought a gun, you knew someone that you were going to give it to couldn't have it, and you gave it to them. That's the textbook definition of a straw purchase. And you probably had a pretty good idea that the person that had was going to use this gun was going to commit crimes with it, because based on this individual's background, it would have been silly to not think he intended to use this for illegal purposes, this gun that you just bought for him. This wasn't a 60-year-old dude who's a prohibited person, wants a gun for self-defense in his home, so his girlfriend buys him a gun, so he's got a gun at home to protect himself. No, this was 29-year-old guy buys a gun for a 21-year-old convicted felon who can't own a gun, and you know damn well he's going to go out and use it for criminal activity. So it's intentional. Everything's intentional. There's no outrage that he's out on bond, $4,500 bond, even though he was a participant in the procuring of a firearm used to kill a cop. But yet here WISN is going to make this big, huge racial thing about a cop who gets released on electronic monitoring, like thousands and thousands of other inmates in Milwaukee County especially have been over the past, you know, decade. It's so phony. And it's just this obsessive race baiting that the media does, this obsessive attempt to frame everything in a racial light, stir the fans of racial division. And first, we need to recognize it, but second, we just need to reject it on every level. And it's really pathetic. And the truth is, I think we do. But the problem is that when the liberal media has such a saturation, such a vice grip on the messaging, which this leads into my one other topic I had for tonight. I had so many things on the queue for tonight. You know, I'm of the belief that conservatism is never really going to win in this country until conservatism gets into the entertainment business. Because think about it, you know, conservative news networks is just not going to cut it. You know, Fox News Channel, that's no longer even conservative, but you know, it was for a time pretty conservative news network, but even that wasn't enough. I mean, think about One America News Network, which is my favorite new network. Newsmax, which is, you know, they're good, but not as good as One America News. One America News Network is awesome. But again, that's just not enough. Most people don't pay attention to news. Most people aren't interested in the news. You know, most people only get their impressions of what's going on in the world from the combination of legacy mainstream media network news and the entertainment industry working together. Example, people are watching NBC to watch America's Got Talent, and they see the news teaser pushing the liberal story of the day. You know, people are watching any other network, all run by liberals, for their entertainment, but not for their news. And then they get exposed to the liberal talking points of the day because of the things that they're tuning into for entertainment purposes. Local news, same thing. You know, the end of you're watching your favorite TV show, and at the end of it, they tease your local news story. People may or may not stick around to watch that lead story on the local news, but they heard the teaser, which is usually sensationalized and out of context. But that's how the liberal media can push the liberal media has all kinds of ways to push the news, quote news, fake news, through their entertainment outlets. And that's the same with sports, with music, with all those things. Fox was the one network that used to have a link between the Fox News channel and the entertainment, because Fox News, 20th Century Fox, I mean, they had programming content. Channel 6, the local affiliate in Milwaukee, they had programming content. But Channel 6 in Milwaukee, they used to just focus on local news, and the local Fox affiliate was not, and again, even the national Fox News channel is no longer very conservative, but it used to be. But even when the national Fox News network was very conservative, that was never run, they never, the way that Fox News had their local news is the local news affiliates. That's why Channel 6 in Milwaukee, they had a 9 o'clock news and a 10 o'clock news. And in the mornings, unlike NBC, ABC, and CBS, who all have their morning shows, Good Morning America, The Today Show, Today Show's NBC's morning news, Good Morning America is ABC's morning news show, and then I think it's CBS This Morning is CBS's. Fox News, the local affiliates, didn't run a national program. They just ran their local network, which, again, is a total lib-headed-up network. So even those teaser news stories that they might run during, and I'm trying to think of something that used to be on Fox. I think American Idol used to be on Fox. That still got the teaser news stories for the local affiliate, not the national Fox News network, which was at the time conservative years ago. So there was really no entertainment connection for conservative networks. One America News, they don't have TV programming that would attract the non-news attentive audience. Newsmax, they don't have the entertainment programming that attracts the non-news attentive audience. Talk radio is not going to do it, because talk radio doesn't reach the masses. Your 25-year-old well, I don't even know what Generation Z is now, but your 18 to 35-year-old non-politically, which is most of them, person that's more interested in what Cardi B is doing and, you know, making TikTok videos and stuff. You know, your 16-year-olds, your teenagers, your tweens that are starting to get into the entertainment media stuff, you know, they say the songs that are popular, I forget. Most people, they say that you form your favorite band at, like, I don't know if it was like 11 or 12 or something, but that's when you start getting into music and entertainment and this, you know. So those people aren't reached by the conservative news networks. Those people aren't reached by talk radio, WISN, of course, you know, Rush Limbaugh, rest in peace, he's not even, but entertainment does. So there has to be a conservative network that gets into entertainment. Until conservatives can populate entertainment and provide a quality entertainment product to reach the masses in a non-political way, I don't think we will reach the masses. Because I believe there is a lot of conservatives in entertainment, sports especially, but they're scared into submission. You know, country musicians scared into submission, scared into submission. You know, when athletes are loud and proud conservatives, that reaches the masses and the younger crowd. Singers, if they were loud and proud conservatives, that would reach their followers, their social media followers. But conservatives won't go there. Conservatives are too afraid of getting canceled. Conservatives are too afraid they can't do it. Liberals aren't afraid to piss off conservatives because conservatives have no real, in some extent they do. I mean, we've, you know, started to tune out sports. We started to tune out the NFL, tune out the NBA and stuff like that. So the alternatives have been, you know, to essentially boycott or just go in a completely different direction. Like me, I mean, I don't even watch late night television anymore. I'm kind of excited that Jay Leno's got a new, I think it's called You Bet Your Life. He's got a new late night show coming up here in September on Fox. At least here in Milwaukee, it's going to run at 10:30. So I'm looking forward to that. I miss Jay Leno. He was a good, it's something lighthearted to watch before you go to bed, but again, it's my belief that until conservatives populate the entertainment complex, whether that's sports, whether it's music, whether it's television, whether it's movies, until conservatives can put out an entertaining product that can attract the younger generation and condition them with conservative principles like freedom, like capitalism, like self-reliance. I'm not talking like propaganda bullshit like the liberal, but just, you know, until we can have TV, movies, other things that are run by conservatives so that we can have these conservative cross-pollination to get conservative news content into the minds of people who are not news attentive through entertainment mediums, I don't think conservatism stand much of a chance. again, I'm hopeful because, again, Donald Trump did win the last election, and I think that everything that he did worked, and we won, and we and it was just stolen. You know, we did everything we needed to do. The proof was in the pudding. The successes of Trump's policies were noticed by people broad and far and wide, and I think he would have win by a landslide, or would have won by a landslide minus the cheating. But still, I really think that for long term, I feel like if we don't get into, if conservatives can't get into the entertainment side with a full conservative contingent, top to bottom, vertically integrated delivery mechanism of conservative entertainment that's appealing to the younger generation who's not interested in political stuff, but yet you can cross-pollinate that way. I think that's what it's going to take to really drive conservatism in this country. Because I think then we can win. Donald Trump, you know, he was a champion, and he brought victory from the top down. Grassroots, bottom up, I don't think we can win without conservative content getting out there from the entertainment sphere, so that it makes it into the impressionable minds of people, younger people who, excuse me, yawning here, younger people who aren't in watching news and aren't tuned in for news purposes. They're just tuned in for entertainment purposes. All right, last thing I'm going to say, Simone Biles. You know, I made the assertion a few shows back that I rejected the comparisons made by some to an NFL quarterback not coming out after halftime or something because, you know, of stress or whatever. It's just not the same. Like I said, Tom Brady, he has a bad game. You know, he's off his game. He still comes out for the second half, but he throws an interception, throws a pick six, gets sacked, something. He's probably not going to be paralyzed. Simone Biles, for whatever reason, she's got vertigo, she's got the twisties or whatever, she can't do her routines or whatever, she ends up, you know, if she's a little bit off, like I said, she does one of her aerial routines and she lands and she's not on balance, she has to take a step. That's a deduction, you know, that's how I have a point about. But if she's so, you know, off balance and her head with the quote twisties that she can't safely rotate, she could land in her head and she could be paralyzed, and that could be, you know, so it's not the same. It's funny because they start off talking about mental health. And to me, if she's got this, Simone Biles had this vertigo thing, this, the twisties where you just lose your balance, you lose your airspace. You can't keep track of where you are in the air to make your turns and your rotations and your flips and your whatever. That's different than a mental health issue from like stress of media attention. Also, and here's the thing, like I think, you know, Mary Lou Retton back in the 80s, I mean, she would have had massive media attention. And so I think everybody now these days thinks, oh, kids nowadays are exposed to so much more, or these young athletes are. I think Mary Lou Retton probably had even more attention because I think the Olympics was a bigger deal back in the 80s. And I think that there was only a few network news stations. There wasn't all these cable channels here and news networks here and all this stratification of different media entertainment. There was, you know, when someone watched the evening news back in the 80s, there was millions and millions and millions and millions of more people watching. So I feel that the pressure to say that these athletes today are under more pressure than athletes in the 80s, example, Mary Lou Retton, I don't think that's probably true. I think athletes of today can't handle the pressure like athletes, example, Mary Lou Retton, of the 80s. That's just my hunch, my opinion, my hypothesis based upon observation and experience. I don't think these athletes today are under more pressure than athletes of years ago. I think athletes today are just brought up as snowflakes, brought up with participation trophies, brought up with too many people, you know. But anyway, I made the assertion that I rejected the comparisons with like Simone Biles not being able to compete with Tom Brady throwing in the towel at halftime and not coming out for the second half. But I did also say that I think this calls into question whether or not she could really be considered the greatest of all time. She couldn't compete in this Olympics where she was the favorite to win everything. To me, I don't know. I think that knocks her off of this greatest of all time consideration. Now, got some disagreement on that. My brother disagreed with me on that. So I wanted to dive into that a little bit more. Greatest of all time. That's subjective. I mean, there's no, look, you know who the Super Bowl champion is. There's things that are very objective. Greatest of all time, it's subjective to begin with. You know, there is no criteria to identify what is the greatest of all time. I throw some things out there. Maybe it's most Olympic medals. That's a quantifiable thing. Maybe it's most dominating. Like, maybe that's not quite as quantifiable, but biggest margin of victory between you and the peer group that you were competing against. You know, if you won by 5 points versus winning by 0.5 points or 0.05 of a point, you know, it's the same thing between a team that has an average margin of victory from a football or from basketball, let's say basketball, the average margin of victory was 2 points. You know, there are a lot of close games, or another team that their average margin of victory was 10, 15 points. Like, they usually blew out their competitors. You know, it's still a little bit quantifiable, but not quite as quantifiable. Most dominating. Other, you know, gymnastics. What's the greatest of all time? Is it the most new tricks named after her? Because in gymnastics, if you're the first to like do some trick, I think if you're the first one to land it in competition, it's named after you. So, you know, someone could have won the most medals, but, you know, didn't really innovate with new stuff and new tricks. And so maybe that wouldn't be as worthy of maybe this greatest of all time moniker. So I'm going to double down on my not the greatest of all time opinion on Simone Biles, because at first I saw on some closing Olympic coverage that with the bronze medal that Simone Biles won on the balance beam, the one event that she did compete in at the Olympics, she tied another American for the most medals in gymnastics at the Olympics, most Olympic medals in gymnastics, but tied. So that's a quantifiable measure. It's not like Michael Phelps, who like has so many more medals in his sport, Olympic medals in his sport, than any other. Now, obviously, there's other measures like the most world championships. I don't know that statistic. But back to support my conclusion that Simone Biles, still a great athlete, but I think she can't be considered. I think she falls out of, for me, that classification of greatest of all time. Look, she competes at the Tokyo Olympics, you know, wins team gold, wins, you know, most of the individual event gold, or maybe with one silver speckled in or something because she had a bad performance. But okay, fine, greatest of all time. But here's another angle why I'm going to say Simone Biles, not the greatest of all time. During the, it was either the World Championships or the Olympic Trials, which was like a month or two before. And for the gymnastics, I don't know if they really call them Olympic Trials or if it's just the World Championships or I don't remember what they, but it was televised. And so I had it on one Sunday, and there's Simone Biles, and she had a goat bedazzled on her leotard, on her uniform. Again, it was either the World Championship or the Olympic Trials, where you decide who is going to get to go to be on the U.S. gymnastics team. Now, that's pretty cocky. You're going to put a goat on your leotard. That's pretty cocky and arrogant. Now, I don't mind cocky and arrogant if you can back it up. If you're going to be cocky, you better back it up. So Simone Biles puts the goat, an image of a goat bedazzled on her uniform, it's making the claim. She's claiming the goat status herself. That's not other people assigning it to her. She's claiming greatest of all time status. Again, that's pretty arrogant and cocky, but then she couldn't back it up. For me, now that's a subjective measure to say, not the greatest of all time. You know, and that's just a subjective opinion of mine, but someone could probably sit down and put, well, she's got this many world championships and she has this many moves named after her. She innovated in her sport like nobody had ever done. And, but okay, well, maybe true. But this, you know, this whole twisties, vertigo thing, I mean, then shut up about the mental health crap. I mean, everybody has stress. Everybody does. These athletes that think that they're under more stress than millions of other citizens, I mean, it's so self-centered. this latest woke theme is like athletes' mental health. I mean, cry me a river. I'm not trying to be inconsiderate and unsympathetic. I'm not being unsympathetic at all to mental health issues. I mean, many, many, many people have them. We all, I mean, most people struggle with some kind of mental health issues. I mean, if you, stress is a mental health issue. So, but what I am being unsympathetic to is I'm not being unsympathetic to mental health issues. I'm being unsympathetic to the notion that athletes have it worse than any of the rest of us. These athletes have, Olympic athletes, they've got coaches, they've got trainers, they've got nutritionists and a chef. They've probably got meal prep prepared for them. Agents, publicists, money, a whole entourage of a support system. So don't cry to me about your mental health issues as unique and, oh, we need to focus and be more compassionate to the mental health of athletes. No, 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 no. Everyone has stress. Try being a single mom with no relatives, moving to a new area, and you don't have any friends to help you out. You want to talk about stress? You're trying to be a single mom who working and getting childcare for your kids and the cost of childcare and just being the only person, no babysitter, you know, and of course then you can find and hire babysitters, but that takes time to get to know people in a community. I mean, that's a level of stress, I think, that would put athlete stress to shame. Be an amateur athlete who competes at a high level in amateur sports, trains, works, et cetera. You know, there's people that are amateurs that do triathlons and all that stuff. They've got to do their own meal prep. They've got to do their own. They don't have personal trainers, massage therapists that they're beck and call. The greatest athletic trainers that do the, you know, interferential stimulation and acupuncture and dry needling and everything that you could possibly need to just an amateur athlete who has to compete at a high level and do it all themselves, their own meal prep, their own nutritionist, their own, you know, stretch themselves instead of getting it just, you know, Simone Biles doesn't have a full-time job. Gymnastics is her full-time job. Being an amateur triathlete or something, an amateur power lifter, no nutritionist, no coach, no agent, no trainer, no chef. So I don't know. I'm not unsympathetic to mental health issues. I am unsympathetic to this notion that athletes are some unique, you know, exposed to some greater level of stress than give me a freaking break. Cry me a river. Again, not unsympathetic to mental health issues, not unsympathetic to stress at all. I mean, believe me, I mean, I struggle with stress issues very frequently. But the notion that athletes, you know, are under some exceptional level of stress, yeah, I'm not buying it. Not buying it, not for one second. Anyway, that's the show. Went a little overtime there, almost 2 hours. I haven't done that long in quite a while, but hopefully we get some good listenership, maybe some people from Fascist Book. I gave my fiance the link to the show and asked her if she could post it in the thread over on Fascist Book that I had started with regards to that comment about the Broadlands and getting the police chief calling me. So we'll see if anybody made the leap over from Fascist Book to Blog Talk Radio this week and caught the show. Otherwise, we'll probably be back at it next week. I mean, the sun's going down earlier, which gets me off the golf course earlier on Sundays, which gets me back to my house earlier and eaten earlier, and then I can start the show at a reasonable time and still do all my other nightly chore type stuff that I do on Sunday nights. So thank you for those who, thanks to Hank for catching the show live. All you guys that caught on the podcast, again, thanks for tuning in. Feel free to shoot me an email, nik@wisconsincarry.org. Again, nik@wisconsincarry.org. If you disagree, feel free. If you think I'm crazy for open carrying in the cup holder of my golf cart, shoot me an email. Happy to hear your angles. Don't be surprised if I use them on next week's show and counter them. Otherwise, you guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.